What if I told you that never going to the gas station again could actually save your life? While that statement may sound dramatic, but the reality is electric cars may just hold the key to reducing the impending effects of climate change. In just over a year, one electric car on the road saves an average of 1.5 million grams of CO2, which is the equivalent to 4 return flights from London to Barcelona. So why then doesn't everyone drive an electric vehicle? Well, a recent study found that 89% of people would actually be encouraged to purchase an electric vehicle if they could just access a parking space with a charger. However, as of right now, public charging in many cities is unreliable and inconvenient, and frankly, in desperate need of transformation. Hello, I am your host, Mike Lake, and in today's preview, I will be talking with Jonathan Carrier. He is the co-founder and CEO of ZipCharge, a solution bringing a powerful mobile charger directly into the hands of the people, promoting electric vehicle usage for a cleaner, more sustainable future for all of us.
Innovation, resiliency, discovery. Join Mike Lake, President and CEO of Leading Cities, as we explore the technologies shaping the possibilities of our future with a preview of tomorrow.
Hello and welcome, Jonathan. Thanks so much for joining us today here on Preview of Tomorrow. I'd like to also welcome our listeners and viewers. It's so exciting for me to be able to introduce you to Jonathan Carrier. He is the CEO and co-founder of ZipCharge. It's a portable power bank that provides an effective, low-cost manner of charging anything from a phone to an electric vehicle. So, Jonathan, before we really dive into what it means to have a portable power bank, tell us, what is it that drove you to get into this home energy power supply type of industry?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I'm very passionate about energy democracy. I see a world of tomorrow where we need to find better ways for people to have access to clean, low-cost energy. I want to leave a legacy of a world behind where my children, my grandchildren, and those that come after me have access to the cleanest air, but also a sustainable planet that we can all live on.
So let's talk a little bit about what that really means. For the average person, we hear about climate change. We hear about the threats to humanity that we're facing. Energy is a huge part of this. Tell me a little bit more about this challenge that the world faces.
Yeah, sure. So we have to hit climate targets and limit global warming to within 1.5 degrees. And that means drastic action. It means two things. It means we have to decarbonize the energy system, first of all. So we have to switch to renewables. That puts a significant pressure on the grid and how we consume energy. But at the same time, we need to switch away in our consumption from fossil fuels towards more sustainable ways of using electricity. So in the world of our vehicles, then that means switching from, you know, a gasoline or a diesel powered vehicle to an electric one.
So, and this is, I mean, I recently moved out of the downtown urban city, core, where an electric vehicle was not even an option for the simple fact that I couldn't charge it. We were fortunate to have a private parking spot, but in a lot that we didn't own or control or provide power access to, or we could park on the street, which again, no charging station. So, tell us, do you have a sense of how many people are, interested in an electric vehicle, but feel like they just don't have the capability of actually owning a vehicle that requires charging?
Yeah, I mean, there's many barriers to EV adoption, vehicle pricing, availability and so forth. But now with the advent of record gas prices, which is not just in the US, but also elsewhere around the world due to geopolitical events, more and more people are considering an electric vehicle for their next car, which means there's about two thirds of people that are actively shopping for an electric vehicle. But the big problem that most people have is charging anxiety, which basically means how on earth am I going to be able to charge it? If there aren't enough public chargers or they're not convenient based on where you live, then you need to find a way to charge at home. But like you've just said, if you don't have a driveway, you don't have a garage, or you don't have a way to install a home charge point, then that creates a real barrier to ownership. So what we've done is we've created the world's first portable EV charger that consumers can buy, and it plugs in easily to any regular socket in your home. And then you just wheel it to your vehicle, you plug it in, and it gives you between 20 and 40 miles of range, which is more than enough for the typical vehicle miles traveled in the US, which at the moment is 26.5 miles.
And coming back to that point, I remember seeing numbers that said almost 40% of people were not likely to buy an electric vehicle in the next 5 years simply because of this reason. I mean, that's a huge chunk of the population who could be adopting a much more climate-friendly, you know, environmentally friendly driving option.
Sure, yeah. I mean, and it's as much about also the green electrons that get put into the vehicle as well. The UK and US estimates are actually around the 40% mark, and that's because, well, in the US you have more single family dwellings, you know, and the same in the UK apart from the bigger cities. But if you go to the likes of Singapore, Hong Kong, Madrid even, you know, it's 60-70% of people live in condos or apartments, you know, and ultimately have no way to be able to charge at home. So this is a massive barrier. And in fact, it's a significant barrier for the majority. It's not a small minority within this. Now, you may turn around to me and say, yeah, but they'll be able to charge in public. But the problem you have there is, even if there are enough chargers, it will always cost 5 to 6 times more to charge in public than it will at home. And that creates a significant inequality barrier, you know, for a very large majority of the population.
To be honest, that's a point I hadn't even thought about. You're absolutely right. I mean, it doesn't make sense to push this solution into the world, this being electric vehicles, when the majority of people just don't have access to it for either the access to a charging station or the cost to have to do it publicly. So let me ask you this. I want to understand the solution you've created more. So walk us through, what does it look like? How does it work?
Sure, yeah. So it's the size of a small cabin suitcase like you take on an aircraft. So it's very small, it's very compact, it weighs 55 pounds, so 25 kilos. And it has a handle and wheels, just like a small cabin suitcase, so you can easily move it anywhere with you. You don't need any special adapters or transformers. It plugs into a regular socket. It takes just over an hour to charge up. And then you wheel it out to your vehicle and you connect it in the US with a Type 1, so a J1772 socket. So that's the standard for the US, you know, where then you will discharge to your vehicle in just over half an hour. But it's so much more than just an EV charger. It's actually a home energy storage device. So what we're building is the software and the automation behind it, so that when you're not using it as an EV charge point, it will arbitrage on energy pricing for you, store energy when it's cheaper and cleaner, and then use that to allow you to power your home. So if you have solar at home, you can store your solar energy for free. But equally, many states in the US have dynamic time of use rates and different time of use rates. So, you know, electricity pricing varies during the day. And this is a way to manage energy smarter, regardless of whether you have an electric vehicle and how you want to use that energy. But and as a consequence, what that means is we can also send energy back to the grid. And because they are a network device, they're a smart IoT device, they can all be networked together. So then we can help the grid also operate more efficiently and smarter by providing a pooled resource of batteries into what's called a virtual power plant. And what that means is you can store energy when it's available, you can turn them all off at different times, and that helps with local balancing of the grid, where actually there's a massive problem, particularly in cities, because all of these local transformers are going to be overloaded and the cost to upgrade them is billions and billions of dollars.
So on that point there about the virtual power plant, I want to make sure I understand it correctly. You're talking about, like, for instance, if I and all my neighbors have one. Collectively, we become, not that I have to have many devices.
Correct. That's exactly right. So think of it like in US terms, a cooperative yeah. of energy, you know, so just like you'd have the farmers in where I used to live in the US, in Wichita in Kansas, you know, they'd have a cooperative for the grain and the wheat that they would harvest. This mm-hmm. is, think of it similar, where you would have a cooperative of energy, except it's virtual and it's all coordinated for you automatically. And what it means is it can not only help reduce your energy bills, it can also help the grid accelerate towards decarbonisation and renewable energy faster, because the wind only blows when it blows and the sun only shines when it shines, which is not always when we need the energy, you know, is when it's being generated. So we need to find smarter ways to help the grid, but at the same time, allow everybody to take advantage of the energy transition so that they can access low cost, clean energy whenever they need it.
So, you know, my mind is now spinning with use cases beyond just charging an electric vehicle.
Of course.
So does this, once charged, I can wheel it anywhere I want. Is there a traditional power socket I can yes. plug anything in?
You can plug anything in. It has USB. So actually think of it like a electric generator. So just like you'd have one of the gasoline generators. And that's really interesting because we have a railway maintenance company that wants to use it to power equipment and tools and lighting at night, because they have a local issue with residents with noise abatement issues. So it's a smarter, cleaner and cheaper way to use it. We have media companies and events companies that want to use them for remote power for events. We have film and television companies that want to use them where they do outside broadcasts and recordings and things like that, because sound technicians hate, you know, gasoline generators because of the impact of the noise. You know, so there's many, many applications. Yes, primarily it's engineered to support EV charging and deliver that home energy system. But actually, it's a flexible tool that you can use anywhere to access power for whatever you need.
Incredible. So if you said it takes an hour to fully charge,
yeah.
How much power does that give you back?
Yeah, so that's for the 4 kilowatt hour version. So that's the smaller version. But we will also do slightly bigger versions up to 8 kilowatt hours, and that will double the charging time. I have to say that 1 hour is based on a 230, 240 volt, so which would be your drier circuit in the US. Obviously, if you're on 110, it will be double the time if you're on 110 volts.
But how long will the energy supply last? You know, if I wheel it over and need to, or use it as a power generator in the times of a power yeah. outage?
It depends on the load that you have, you know, you're drawing from the battery. So, of course, if you're using, you know, something that's very energy intensive, like a hairdryer or something like that, that, you know, but you're not going to be using a hairdryer for hours at a time, you know, the most you're ever going to use it for is to charge an electric vehicle, you know, where you're going to be using it continuously and you also need high power. Actually, this can last you a very long time. In the US, it depends based on state, you know, or region of the US, obviously, depending on how much air conditioning people use. But actually, our devices will give people a minimum of 2 to 3 hours of energy resiliency at home for running all of their appliances quite easily, you know, for example. So we all know about the challenges in Texas with the blackouts, but also right. what's being communicated in California for the next 3 summers, where there's going to be rolling blackouts, because what the challenge in California is there's a huge amount of solar. And the more solar there is, the bigger the dip in the middle of the day in terms of the energy that's generated. And it's called the duck curve. So if anybody's really interested in this, just Google the duck curve and it'll show you a power graph that goes like this, drops and then comes up all the way up again to the kind of 6 o'clock in the evening peak requirement. And the problem is, the more solar in the day, the greater the ramp up to that peak in the evening and the bigger the impacts on the grid, which is why these rolling blackouts are being called in California for the next 3 to 4 summers, because there's a big, big problem. So actually having distributed energy storage like our device, where you can take energy when it's available, like the solar during the day, but then use it at those peak times, could massively help California. You know, never mind the challenges with the grid in Texas, which is a very specific, you know, and, you know, unique situation. But it's the same across the US, and it's certainly the same across Europe and everywhere else in the world.
So this is totally fascinating to me. I mean, what I'm hearing is not only is this a way to, you know, for any person to be able to be more resilient against power outages, but to also, for instance, in my home now, we have a yard, which a whole part of the yard is inaccessible for power. But it would be great to wheel this thing out there, plug it in, and light up that part of the yard, for instance, while we're doing a barbecue or whatever.
Yeah, you could take it camping with you. You can use it on a construction site. You know, you could still have it at home. Even if you don't have an electric vehicle, you could still have one of these devices at home and connect it to your consumer unit, which is where the electricity comes in, your energy comes in from the provider. And then it can do all of the things that I said, where it can work out automatically when to store energy, when to help and support your home and provide energy to the home in order to lower the costs. But also, if you make the decision, the lowest carbon intensity, which means the electrons are as green as possible that you are consuming. And sometimes the lowest carbon intensity is not always the cheapest. And we think in the future, consumers may be willing to pay slightly more.
Premium. Yeah.
Yeah. But to have the cleanest and greenest electrons that they otherwise consume, no matter where they are, for the home, for the car, or whatever it might be. And we'll give customers that option.
It's really amazing. So I always end our discussions with the same question, and that is, looking 10, 20, 50 years from now, assuming everybody has a zip charge unit in their home, what does it mean? What does it mean to the individual? What does it mean to the community, the world at large? What's the impact that you see zip charge can really have?
Yeah, so our mission is to enable 1 billion people around the world to access low-cost, clean energy anywhere for anything. And that's ultimately our mission. And we think if we can do that, we can save 1 million tons of CO2 a year just from those people, you know, using the device at some point in time. And that's significant because that can dramatically support helping reach those climate targets, but also helping decarbonize the electricity system and providing smarter ways to deliver energy. And we think not only will that enable the grid to save billions of dollars, but individually, it will allow people to save $500 to $1,000 to $1,500 a year on their energy costs. And we think that can have a significant and profound impact, particularly in more disadvantaged communities, particularly where the chances of inequality and also that energy inequality will exist and will only widen in the future. And the reason why I say that is, if you have a single family dwelling in the US, you have a garage, you have a driveway, you have a roof so you can have solar. But anybody that lives in a multi-unit dwelling or lives in an apartment or a condo, they don't have a driveway, they don't have a garage, and they don't have a roof. Those people will be left behind. So we want to avoid people being marginalized, and we want to help make cities more resilient, but also safer, cleaner, and more and better for everybody.
Well, on that note, the time went way by way too fast, but I do want to thank you, not just for being a guest here on Preview of Tomorrow, but more importantly, for bringing this opportunity to anybody. I mean, really empowering the individual to have their part in making a greener, cleaner, more energy efficient world. And all the positive impacts you just described that can create. So thank you so much, Jonathan, for joining us today on Preview of Tomorrow.
That's great. Thanks for having me, Mark.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of Preview of Tomorrow. Listeners like you are essential to advancing our efforts to drive resiliency and sustainability for all. I ask that you give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or whichever streaming platform you prefer. Your feedback helps us to grow and share these brief previews of what life in the future can be. In addition to thanking our guest today, I want to thank Peter Roy and Demetria Bridges for making this podcast possible. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and encourage others to also join us each week in previewing the possibilities of tomorrow.
Preview of Tomorrow is brought to you by Leading Cities, a global nonprofit driving resilience and sustainability for all by unleashing the potential of the world's cities. Join them at leadingcities.org.